Well, good evening. Like those before me, I'd like to thank Austin for giving me the opportunity to come and speak. I've always come to Wednesday night services at 5:45 and enjoyed seeing the sermons. And it's a big moment for me and my family that I get the opportunity to preach here in front of everyone. I'd like to thank the elders for allowing me to come up here and speak as well, and my friends for helping me with the service. I know that I've developed as a Christian because of my friends, and I'm grateful for them and for what they've done for me in my Christian life. The topic I was given tonight to talk upon was, where will you stand at the cross? And I appreciate this topic very much because I feel as though we have the opportunity to look at it in a different way. Typically, we look at the cross and the scenario of Jesus coming on the crucifixion. And we look at it in this somewhat detracted way, sometimes I feel like. Sometimes I feel as though we look at the cross as though it was God doing something that he had planned out and that it wasn't as big of a deal to him emotionally or physically. That's what we think it is. Many times in church, it's been noted that we look at Jesus more as just a God instead of a man. And so tonight, I would like for us to look at the crucifixion account, not just focusing on Jesus as God, but specifically focusing on Jesus as a man. I'd like for us to look at Jesus and try to place ourselves in his shoes, place ourselves where he was at, and see if we can develop a greater appreciation for what the cross means and what the cross is. In looking at the crucifixion account, there are three points that I would like for us to look at tonight in our short time together. The first point is the injustice of Jesus' crucifixion. The second, the emotional agony of Christ's death. And third, the significance of his death. If you'll turn over to John chapter 19, that's where our scripture will be from tonight, where we'll spend the entire time. John chapter 19. And we'll be reading the first four verses for our first point. The first point, the injustice of Christ's crucifixion. John chapter 19, verses 1 through 4. So then Pilate took him and scourged him, and the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. And then they said to him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" And they struck him with their hands. Pilate went out then again and said to them, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no fault in him." Now the first thing I'd like to point out is looking at the first verse compared to the last verse, you find something that's stark and concerning. You notice Jesus, that it says that Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. He punished him. But then look at the fourth verse. He says he took him out to the Jews. And he said, "I find no fault in him." At Fried Hardeman, I study political science and biblical studies. And so I find it an interesting interaction here whenever we have the Bible conjoined with law. And what we note throughout legal tradition and American tradition for law is that There's this idea that permeates all systems of law. It's generally accepted. It's this idea of the burden of proof. You see, Jesus didn't get a fair trial, as you've probably heard several times. But it's worse than what we could imagine. There's this burden of proof that you need overwhelming evidence to convict Christ for crimes that he supposedly committed to the Roman government. But instead, they chose to forego all legal rights. And they chose to flog him. And I want us to understand exactly what it means whenever it says that he's flogged. This is not just like they roughed him up or they beat him up. The Romans had a practice before the crucifixion. They had this practice called the little death. And that's what it means to be flogged. What they would do is they would take straps and they'd lace them with glass and sharp objects. And they'd place them over a stone and they would beat them with the glass. And the glass were designed in such ways that it was hooks that would rip and pull from the flesh. And this was done by intention so that it would pull away and cause mass bleeding. In fact, most of the time, it would end up gouging out their eyes, removing large chunks of flesh, breaking their ribs, and exposing internal organs. It wasn't all too uncommon that people died just from the beating that they received before the crucifixion, before the pre-death. And so I want us to understand that Christ wasn't just, he didn't just have his legal rights taken away. He wasn't just sitting there being abused by a system. He was abused by the system and then beaten in a way that mankind has rarely ever seen. He was beaten so bad that he nearly died. And so I want us to understand that this is something that I don't think we too often look at. And I want us to notice what Christ didn't do in response. What Christ didn't do is he didn't say, you know, how dare this happen? How dare you treat me this way? No, he didn't respond and say anything. He kept himself silent. And, you know, we have in our modern society, and as well as Roman society as well, that whenever these acts of travesty, these acts of injustice came about, people would come out and they would rally and they would riot. We have today, there's different watch groups who watch for these things. There's documentaries made. There's people who express outrage for days and weeks. You can't turn on the TV without seeing someone expressing judgment for injustice because of our legal system. But yet no one was here for Christ. If you notice in the verse and you continue reading around, you notice that no one was there writing for Christ. No one was there speaking out for Christ saying that this isn't fair. How dare you treat him this way? Christ was by himself. And I think that begs the question, why would Christ not say anything for himself? Why would he not try to defend himself? I think the answer is that he cared for us. That he knew ahead of time that I'm about to go through something terrible. That I'm about to go through something that I don't want to have to go through. That these people, they don't love me, they don't care for me, and they want me to hurt. But I know that there are people that need me. And so I'm willing to go through that for them. And then I'd like for us to notice in verses 12 through 16 regarding our first point. If you turn down to verses 12 through 16, it reads, "From then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, 'If you let this man go, you are not Caesar's friend. Whoever makes himself a king speaks against Caesar.' When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus out and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha. Now it was the preparation day of the Passover, in about the sixth hour, and he said to the Jews, 'Behold your king!' And they cried out, 'Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!' Pilate said to them, 'Shall I crucify your king?' Then the chief priests answered, 'We have no king but Caesar.' Then he delivered him to them to be crucified. So they took Jesus and led him away." Now some in the religious world have looked at Pilate and they've said, you know, Pilate really wasn't that bad of a guy. Pilate was, he tried to let Jesus go. He saw that Christ was a good man, and he tried to help him. It says that he tried to let him go. But when we notice history and we take account of history, what it reveals to us is that Pilate had no love for Christ. In fact, Pilate had a strong contention with the Jews. They constantly were fighting and constantly were attacking back and forth between one another. And what Pilate instead was doing here, and what the text indicates, is that he was using Christ as a political pawn. Not only had Christ just been beaten within an inch of his life, but now he's taken to being slandered among the streets. He's used as a political instrument for something that he isn't even a part of. Can you imagine the shame? Everyone looking at you in the streets, people throwing things at you, people making fun of you, and you just tried to help. You just want to save them. But instead, they treat you worse than anyone's ever been treated. Can you put yourselves in those shoes? Are you willing to? Because it's a terrible, terrible place. But he didn't demand that he be treated fair. He knew he had a higher purpose and a higher responsibility. He knew he had to take care of us. My second point. I'd like for us to look at the emotional agony of Christ's death. If you look over at verses 25 and 20 through 27, the verse reads, "Now there he stood by the cross, Jesus his mother, and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, 'Woman, behold your son.' And then he said to the disciple, 'Behold your mother.' And from that hour, The disciple took her to his own home. If you can imagine this scenario, you're beaten and bloodied. You probably can't see well. You're exhausted. You're trying to just get through and knowing that the worst is yet to come. And then you see it. You've made the long trek, and you see your family sitting right there. And they're looking at you with looks of disdain, looks of fear. They don't understand what's going on. They know that their brother, that their son, has been convicted by the government and that he's been sentenced to death. They don't know why, but they're left to assume that he's done something bad. And we don't have a lot as far as what Jesus said to them or what he would have spoken to them. But as a son, I can empathize with this scenario. I can empathize when he said, "Woman, behold your son." And they said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." What he's saying is, "John, whatever happens, take care of my family. I have to go and deal with something that's terrible and excruciating and the worst thing anyone will ever see. But please, take care of my family. I won't be around to take care of them anymore. And I need you to do it. I don't want to have to leave, but I have to. I have to go and save everyone. I have to go for a higher purpose." And you know, I can't understand that kind of sacrifice. I can't wrap my mind around it. For people who hate you and beaten you within an inch of your life and force your family to watch this heinous act, I can't understand it. And I couldn't love them. And I can't imagine what was going through Christ's mind. I couldn't find a way to verbalize it, to put it into words, what Christ was feeling. But when doing study and prepare for this lesson, I came across a poem that I think is perhaps adequate, or at least close to it, for what Christ would have liked to express to his mother. To his family. The poem's called "The Dying Soldier to His Mother." And it reads, "On the field of battle, mother, all the night alone I lay. Angels watching o'er me, mother, till the breaking of the day. I lay thinking of you, mother, and the loving ones at home. Till our dear cottage, mother, boy again, I seem to come. He to whom you taught me, mother, on my infant knee to pray, kept my heart from fainting, mother, when the vision passed away. In the gray of the morning, mother, comrades hear me to town. From my bosom, tender fingers wash the drops that trickle down. I must be going, mother, going to that home of rest. Kiss me as of old, my mother. Press me near to your breast. But I could repay you, mother, for the faithful love and care. God uphold and bless you, mother, in this bitter woe you bear. Kiss for me, my little brother. Kiss my sister's love so well. When you sit together, mother, tell them how their brother fell. Tell them the story, mother, when I slept beneath the sod, that I died to save my country, all from love to her and God. Leaning on the merit, mother, of the one who died for all. Peace is in my bosom, mother. Hark, I hear the angels call. Don't you hear them singing, mother? Listening to the music swell. Now I leave you, loving mother. God be with you. Fare you well." We sing a song. We just sang a song called "He Could Have Called 10,000 Angels." It references this particular moment. I put myself in the shoes of Christ. And I think about, what would I do? I have the chance to make it all go away. I have the chance to save my family, to save myself. Because I know what's coming, and I know that it is the worst death anyone has ever had to face. We sing the song, "He could have called 10,000 angels." But I know that I would have. I would have not gone through that. But I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that he chose to. Because if he didn't, We'd never have a hope for heaven. We'd never have anything outside just this world. And I'm so grateful for his sacrifice and choice that he chose to make. In my third and last point, I'd like for us to recognize the significance of Christ's crucifixion. If you read me verses 36 through 37, 36 reads, "For these things were done, that Scripture should be fulfilled. Not one of his bones shall be broken." And again, another Scripture says, "They shall look on him who they pierced." In Psalms 34:20 and Zechariah 12:10, the prophets prophesied exactly what would happen to Christ on the cross. And I think sometimes we don't necessarily recognize the entire implication of what that means. Sometimes we recognize, rightly so, that this was the plan the entire time, that this had been a foregone conclusion. But I wonder if we think about the weight that that had on Christ, the man and God, who knew his entire life, this is what's going to happen. I was perfect and I didn't deserve anything that they're going to do to me. But this is what they're going to do. You know, I can understand that to a little bit, to a small extent, that sometimes whenever you have something that's heavy on you, that's something that knows bad's going to happen, you can feel it on your chest. And so I can't imagine the weight that Christ must have known his entire life. And yet he still continued to save us. He still continued to do what was right for us. And that's just a love that I can't comprehend. That's a love that I can't understand. And I'm so grateful for that. In closing, we want to ask the question, on which side of the cross will you stand? If we'll finish and read the end of the verse, verses 38 through 42. Said, "After this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly, for fear of the Jews, asked Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him permission. So he came and took the body of Jesus. And Nicodemus, who at first came to Jesus by night, also came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pounds. And they took the body of Jesus and bound it in strips of linen with the spices, and as the custom of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb in which no one had yet been laid. So there they laid Jesus, because of the Jews' preparation day, for the tomb was nearby." The question at the beginning of the sermon is, where will you stand at the cross? Essentially, you have two options. You can stand with Christ. You can recognize the painful sacrifice that he spent his entire life working for us. You can recognize that his love is beyond any compassion that we can understand and anything that we can grasp. And you can choose to stand with him. Here in this passage we just read, we noted that there's just a few who will come to Christ's aid. If you notice, Joseph, he came at night and with only a few people. He came to honor Christ's sacrifice. Scripture tells us that not many will honor Christ's sacrifice, and that not many will choose to stand on the side of Christ and recognize what his death really means, both as God and as a man. Tonight you have the option, you have the choice to honor Christ's sacrifice. Perhaps you haven't made the decision or the choice to honor Christ's sacrifice, or maybe you've decided to strive away from it. We ask that you make that decision right. If there's anything we can do to help you, please come as we stand and as we sing.